The good news is, those of you who are creators and aspiring creators, there is an extraordinary amount of services available to you, many of them for free. Now, the thing I'm always hearing is, I can't get legal help. How many of you have had problems getting a lawyer at a reasonable price? Please don't be shy. I want to see some hands here. And that's a good deal of you. How about health insurance? That's a good deal of you, too. Great. We're here to help you. How many of you have ever heard of the Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts? And how many of you have availed yourself of their services? Okay, that tells me a lot.
I just heard about them last week.
Right. The Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts, excellent, excellent, excellent organization, helped me out of a really nasty contract problem in the 1980s. They've been around all that time. A sticky situation where a publisher wanted my copyright and trademark and were willing to register it even though it didn't appear in the contract that they had the right to do so. It took me years of wrangling, probably $50,000, $60,000 worth of legal bills, cost me $1,000 out of pocket. Excellent, excellent organization. And how about health insurance? How many of you are familiar with the AHIRC database? Absolutely none of you. Excellent. I have a lot to tell you today. The AHIRC database was created in 1998 by the Actors Fund of America with a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts as a health insurance resource for artists and people in the entertainment industry. Since then, with support from the Commonwealth Fund, it has expanded to include resources for the self-employed, low-income workers, the underinsured, and the uninsured who require medical care as well as other groups. That would be almost everybody in this room. The participating universities in this plan, well, you don't need to hear that. The AHIRC database is access to health insurance resources for care. You go to this website, www.ahirc.org. It's on your list. In fact, my list was so long when I was compiling resources for you, and many of these are free services available to you on the internet with a little bit of Google. I came up with more than 50 pages of data that will be going up on my website in increments. Many of the most important are on that sheet we're passing around, but 50 pages of information for you. And access to health insurance resources for care will take you to a website where they will show a little map of the United States. And on that map, you click your state, and what you get are literally pages of links just for your state that will give you access to health care information. And here is just a portion of what is available at this website. Right at the beginning, we've got information for artists and entertainment professionals, health programs for artists and musicians, financial assistance for artists, architecture, design, dance, entertainment industry unions, film, television, theater, literary arts, graphic arts groups, multiple arts groups, music groups, visual arts groups, arts and cultural councils, and arts service organizations. By state. That's just the first paragraph, and this is several pages for the state of Virginia alone. When you get to California, it makes your eyes bleed. There's so much information. It's all available for free to you at any time, which makes this information resource, which is intended for health insurance, a great resource to double check, just to look up artist rights organizations. There, many of them are linked here and can give you direct information about how to get health insurance. www.ahirc.org. When you go down, you've got health insurance information for individuals and families, low-income individuals and families, self-employed persons and small businesses, children, seniors, women with special needs, that includes programs for pregnant women, breast and cervical cancer, reproductive health, hello, this is great stuff, veterans, employees and union members, people with HIV, immigrants and refugees, disabled individuals, mentally ill individuals, and people with substance abuse problems, and people with other conditions and diseases. It's all there. AHIRC.org. Absolutely excellent resource. and another fantastic resource, especially if you're interested in learning about money management. How many of you have retirement plans? Okay, that's a pretty small group. How about, okay, I bet all of you are going to practically raise your hands when you hear this. How many of you are not very good at managing your money? Almost everybody in the room. Well, the good news is, if you would like to learn and you're willing to take a little time to spend some time on the internet, which is free, you can go to the library. The government has a website called mymoney.gov. Just mymoney.gov. Mymoney.gov is the U.S. government's website dedicated to teaching all Americans the basics about financial education. Whether you are planning to buy a home, balancing your checkbook, investing in your 401k. Get up here. What are you doing standing over there? The resources on mymoney.gov can help you do it better. Throughout the site, you will find important information from 20 federal agencies government-wide. And one of the cool things here is the free My Money Toolkit. You fill out this form at mymoney.gov, and they will send you a group of publications on saving, investing, protecting, and getting the most out of your money. This is perfectly free. There's information on 401ks, IRAs, all of this cool stuff, consumer action handbook, consumer advisory on fraud, consumer information catalog, saving, investing, insuring your deposits, money smart, blah, 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 blah. Small Business Administration, SBA.gov, Small Business Planner. Planning information on people who are running a small business. If you are a self-employed writer or artist, you are a business person. You need to start thinking like one. It doesn't mean that you're all about the money and you don't have your creative integrity and yada, yada, yada. But if you don't protect yourself, no one else will. If you take just a little bit of time every week to learn the basics about money management, and you can get it for free on the internet, you are going to make your life a much, much happier place. For example, how many of you knew that there were health savings plans? Not many. There are federal tax-deductible health savings plans. If you are somebody that cannot afford a really good insurance policy, what you do is you get a catastrophic insurance policy. That is something with a fairly high deductible that you can acquire that will protect you if you get something really terrible, say if you get cancer, something that's going to cost an awful lot of money. You're pretty much screwed on your daily, day-to-day stuff. You're gonna have to pay to go get your teeth fixed. You're going to have to pay to go and get the basics done. Okay, but this health savings plan is like an IRA for healthcare. As a matter of fact, you can take money from your IRA and transfer it into the health savings plan legally and use it for your medical care. And it is deductible. It is deductible differently depending on whether you're an employee or a self-employed person. You'll have to go to the internet and get those details. But this savings plan is like an IRA for your health. You're basically protecting yourself by putting money away for a rainy day, fully tax deductible, and the money that you take out of that plan for your health care is not taxable. You're cool with this. So if you cannot afford a comprehensive insurance plan and you just want to protect yourself against the worst, you can get this kind of policy and the health savings plan to go along with it. So that is something very important to And I want this man to introduce himself before I talk your ear off. And this is a very interesting gentleman, particularly if you're in the entertainment industry, about which I don't know very much. My area is publishing, and this gentleman is from Entertainment Strategy Group. We're going to let him introduce himself right now.
Hi there. My name is Patrick Delaney. I am with Entertainment Strategies Group, which is a new company that helps independent producers in complying with and understanding all of the various different union agreements that they sign as filmmakers in the United States. 95% or more of the filmmaking in the United States is union work. So there are a lot of rules that need to be understood, and it's very expensive not to. So that's where we kind of come in, and it helps to smooth over the relationships, because there's, generally speaking, a lot of animosity on occasion between production companies and the various guilds and unions, because, generally speaking, they don't really understand each other's needs. The unions are there to protect the workers. The producers are there trying to not lose all of their money creating content. So everyone really does have the same best interest, that they are successful in creating a product, and they just need to find the common ground to do so, and we're there to help do that. I have a background in labor relations for the last several years, and my colleagues are former guild and union officials. We have the former general counsel of SAG, the former chief negotiator of SAG, the former general counsel of the WGA, the former general counsel of the DGA. We've got a lot of information as a resource. So, you know, that's really what we're about, is trying to help people make movies, TV, new media, all that.
Excellent. And I want you guys to raise your hand if you have any questions, because I can skip around. My notes are from hell. They're quite extensive. So, yeah, right there. Yeah, are we out of the list?
Yeah, there's nothing left.
There's nothing left? Okay, I tell you what. My name is Colleen Dorn. My blog is a distant soil. Well, there's a link to my blog at ColleenDorn.com. You come to my website, you contact me, I will email you the list, and I will be putting up everything on these 50 frickin' pages onto my website. I keep a running blog. Jamie's laughing at me. I'm always posting stuff on my blog called Creators, Resources, Finance, and Education. And usually at least once a week I post something about money or contracts or God knows whatever. And if you go to my blog and you look for that section, you can see all of the past entries. I go over bad contracts I've signed. I was just telling him earlier, I did a 7-part series of my early history in publishing where I signed with some very bad companies, and even though I was doing books that were selling 40,000 copies a month, I never made over $10,000 a year. And I posted my Social Security statement for the first decade of my career, showing that for 2 entire years of full-time work, I had 0 taxable income, and my taxable income was never above $10,000, because I worked with some very not nice people and signed some contracts that were not to my best interest, particularly one which allowed my publishers to cross-collateralize the accounts on my books, basically setting up a situation that every time I did a new book, the expenses on the new book were counted against the previous books, and I was always in debt to my publisher, perpetually in debt to my publisher. And if I stopped working to allow royalties to build up, I was in violation of my agreement, and it kept me poor. In absolute abject poverty, and I had a lawyer, which is even worse, because one thing you've got to understand is, first of all, you've got to get the right lawyer. I can't tell you how many people out here will go and just get a lawyer. Well, a lawyer won't do. It's got to be a lawyer that understands this field, whatever field of endeavor you're in. And when I first started in comics, there really weren't any lawyers that specialized in the comic book industry. I think there were maybe one or two. I think Frank Miller's lawyer was around back then. What's his name again? Mitch or something like that? I don't remember. Who cares? Anyway, point being that there were no lawyers that specialized in my... I had a real estate attorney look at my contract. What the hell did he know? And your lawyer can tell you whether or not the language in your contract is legal. He can't tell you whether or not the contract is in your best interest. It's a different matter entirely. So a lawyer will look at that and go, yes, okay, it's okay, net, yes, okay. But he can't tell you what net means to that publisher or how to get that publisher to define net for you, which is something I learned to 10 years of poverty. You know, people think I made a fortune on a book that was sold over 100,000 copies. I didn't make any money. I didn't make a thing. And I've spent the rest of my life trying to keep you guys from making my mistakes and getting ripped off for about $250,000 before your 21st birthday. Please don't let this happen to you. I'm so glad you're here. I thought there'd be 10 people here. I swear to God, I can't believe you're here. I'm so happy. I'm so proud of you. I just want to take your little cheeks. Okay, we got another question.
Mind saying what company it is that screwed you up?
They are no longer publishing anybody.
Nice.
As a matter of fact, I'll tell you, this is another thing that some publishers will do to get out of their obligations. They violated the copyrights and trademarks of all of the creators by trying to file them in their name. We didn't have contracts that gave them copyrights in our work, and our contracts never mentioned the word trademark at all. They said because there was a licensing agreement, that meant an implied transferal of trademark. This is, of course, bullshit. But what that is a, yeah, so what, sue me technique, you know. I'm going to claim this, and you have to sue me to prove it isn't. You have to sue me to get a release for the rights to your book. This is where the volunteer lawyer for the arts came in. When we did eventually get an attorney, and they shut down their entire company, this was a small press, transferred all their assets to another company, and we couldn't touch it. There was nothing left. Then I got my rights back, but there was nothing left to get. There was no money I could not collect. It was a pretty dirty deal. Something you really won't see happening that much with a major company, but some of the small fry, yeah, little boogers are slippery. They are slippery. They will just shut down and pop up under another name. And I swear to God, I did not know that they had shut down and popped up under another name. I just knew they'd shut down and sold some of their contracts to another company. The other company contacted me about a week later and said, we really love your stuff. We bought all these other contracts. We'd like to publish your book. And I smelled a rat. And about a month later, in the industry press, it was revealed that my ex-publishers were on the board of the directors of the new publisher. They were literally trying to get me to sign on with them at another company under another name when they owed me all this money from the previous company. And, you know, I was a teenager when I got started. I didn't know all this crap, you know. I was, like, ripe for the picking. But I wasn't that dumb. So I'm going to move on to the volunteer lawyers for the arts then, because this is really, really important. And you'll find them at VLANY.org. Yes, ma'am?
The projector's still on.
Oh. Ooh, technology. I'm not seeing this. I'm not seeing anything here. Oh, well, screw it. If you can figure it out, it's all yours, babe. Okay, VLANY.org. The Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts delivers pro bono and low-cost legal services and information to over 10,000 members of the arts community each year. The Art Law Line is 212-319-ARTS. That's 212-319-2787, extension 1, Monday through Friday, 10 to 4. The Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts plays an important role in educating individual artists, arts professionals. We don't care about that. Okay, let's skip on to Mediate Arts, which is part of the Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts. They pair artists with mediators to mediate or resolve arts-related disputes. Let's face it, going to court is expensive and crappy. So they do have mediation services. Again, the phone number is still 212-319-ARTS, extension 16. And they cover all disciplines of the arts, acting, animation, architectural design, bookmaking, visual arts, blah, 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 blah. You can go on and on and on and on and on about that. They have been wonderful for me. They will be wonderful for you. Yes, ma'am?
Is it something you would only do if you're in trouble, or if you just need legal advice before you get in trouble?
If you just need legal advice, that'll work too. Yeah, here's all this cool stuff. Can you read this?
No.
Yeah.
Just write the back of the paper, and that would be huge.
All righty then. I'm an artist. I might actually have a pen.
There's a focus over here.
Okay, we will get that up in a second as soon as I can. Oh, my bag is right in front of me, or I can't possibly see it. This is really embarrassing. Ooh, a Sharpie. Ooh, a Sharpie. Okay. Where was I? Ooh.
You know, I was just going to add to that.
Talk.
Mm. Yeah, you draw, I talk. The U.S. Copyright Office is perhaps a vital preventive maintenance resource where you guys can be registering your work through the Copyright Office, and if you are sure to get a receipt that your work has been filed there, then, you know, there's an implied copyright already in place when you create something. the question becomes one of proving the title. So once you've got the receipt from the Copyright Office, that will serve later on down the line as an important proof during in the chain of title.
I think
I saw a hand over here first, and then over here. Sir, did you?
Yeah, dealing with the Copyright Office. I did that a couple of years ago, and what they sent me back was reissue form on
right, just with the date stamped on it?
Yeah, and then kind of like copies of the work that I sent down.
Absolutely.
Save that.
You're going to want to keep that. One more over here, and then I see.
Oh, I don't think I've finished your question. If this is primarily for people that can't afford legal representation, they are going to ask you about your income and whatnot, and frankly, that's most artists. So even if you're low income, they can still find you an affordable representative. So you do not need to be in trouble. If you need somebody to look over your contract, they're there for you as well. So don't be afraid to pick up the phone and give them a call and let them know what your situation is. And in my case, in one case, they were, in fact, same publisher. Same publisher. They've helped people out of the country. People I'd never met. They're friends of mine now because they love me because I helped them. They were all the way in Australia. And the Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts was able to get them an attorney to deal with the same publisher. And it cost them out of pocket only $1,500. But it saved their copyright. It was worth it. And something else, very important to start registering your work. I think we're all kind of lax about registering our work. But how many of you are aware of the Orphan Works Bill? Yeah. I'm not sure how much of that we can really get into at this point because I was raving about it earlier. But the Orphan Works Bill is basically going to be a situation where if your work is not registered and in a database, in a searchable database, it's going to be very easy to claim jump in the future. Now, the intention of the Orphan Works Bill is to make it easy for libraries, museums and so forth, public institutions, to make use of work that the copyright owner cannot be found, and you know, you want to use it for educational purposes and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, the drawback is that this will also make it easy for people who are willing to use your work for profit who can't find your work in a database to use it without your permission. And unfortunately, the language of the bill at this point, I'm being as diplomatic as possible, does not work in the creator's favor. And you may want to start taking a little more care of your copyright registration. That's yeah, right back there.
So at this point, this is only a bill. It's not just a pass.
It's just a bill. Yes, it's only a bill. And it's sitting here on Capitol Hill. In the House. And there's a second bill in the Senate. The language is slightly different. What is it, H.R. 151? Can anybody remember? I'm on the committee. I can't even remember the name of the... H.R. 151. It is in the House. It is in the Senate. The language is different. Like I said, the intention of the bill is good. I sincerely recommend that everyone in this room go look up the Orphan Works Bill. Do not read people's arguments about the bill. Read the language of the bill itself. There are some stink bombs in there you need to be aware of. For example, there's no definition of net, which we all know means nothing. There's no definition of, what's that term? Reasonable? Uh-huh. And the penalty for using work in certain circumstances, the penalty for using work without somebody's permission is limited to 20% above reasonable estimated usage costs. Okay, we're all for that. All right, not good language. You need to look it up. And the problem is that even though there are a lot of people who do oppose the bill in its current form, the committee that is going to be going over this bill in the Senate and Congress next year is going to be different than the one we have now, and one of the new committee heads is a copy leftist who is not necessarily looking out for the best interest of creators, even though I'm sure he has a very good heart. Yeah.
I read somewhere that one of the people supporting the bill was Bill Gates.
I wouldn't be surprised. I can't recall that off the top of my head, no. I couldn't say. I know some people who are very much for it, and I don't think they've really thought through just how unlikely it is that there is going to be a searchable database that is going to cover everything we've got, and the penalties for not properly searching the database are pretty slim, and the safety net around the whole thing about proving that you did search the database is not so great, and they want to make it a dark search. That means you can't actually see who's searching the database or is using it. It's daffy, okay? You know, my opinion. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. $40 right now, isn't it?
Sounds about right.
I think it's $40. It's $40. And remember, you can gang register stuff, too. You know, like a year's worth of comics, you know, your book. Yes, sir.
What about the trademarks?
Yeah, trademark. Again, trademark, hey, easy, A. All the questions you need about trademark, it's on the internet, trademark.gov, I believe. And your trademark is very different from copyright. And I came up with it. Copyright is the right to copy. Trademark is the mark of one's trade. Easiest way to remember what a trademark is think of a village with three pubs. You get the Horse Head Pub, Ox Head Pub, Boar's Head Pub. Boar's Head Pub makes the best ale in town. Horse Head Pub and Ox Head Pub look at Boar's Head Pub and say, wow, they got a good deal. If we put the Boar's Head on our ale, it'll sell better. And then Horse Head and Ox Head are producing really stinky ale, which hurts the business of the Boar's Head. So that would be what a trademark is. It is in the mark of one's trade. It designates the originator of goods and services. So if you want to register your trademark, I personally needed a lawyer to do it. I think I know my stuff, and I couldn't do it. I'm too stupid. There's also estate trademark registration. If you can't afford a federal registration and you still want some little measure of protection, you might try state trademark registration. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I'm completely ignoring this gentleman. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. How much content do you have to register? Can you just get off with a title, or do you got to have what types of material?
You cannot register a title. You can't register a name. If you're trying to register a name or something, you're thinking more along the line of trademark, again, the mark of one trade, and you actually have to have the intent of using that material on products, and then you have to be able to show eventually that you used them. For example, I registered a trademark a couple of years ago, and then my lawyer came back in February and said, you know, because we hadn't done any T-shirts or whatever lately, and, you know, we just hadn't done any, and she said, you need to have some T-shirts or whatever with your logo on them, and so we went and zipped some up on Cafe Press right then to make sure that our trademark was still in force. You've got to actually use it. You can't just say, well, I'm going to use this title, and it sounds really great, and I like this logo, and I'll use it eventually. You're not going to be able to keep it for very long, and it's an expensive process. You don't want to go just throwing stuff out there. To
but
sit on it.
On the copyright thing, is how much of my work do I have to have, like a paragraph, or this is my concept? And
you can't really copyright an idea. You can only copyright the execution of an idea.
So it's the end result that you have to have before you can copyright.
Well, you can copyright a paragraph if you really want to, but I don't see why. Because if you've got a really great idea, the best protection is to shut up about it. Yeah, honest to God, just don't talk about it. Don't show it to anybody. And the thing is that you can't copyright an idea. You can only copyright the execution of the idea.
So I have to have all my comic done before I can copyright.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. All you can do is copyright the execution of the idea. A man who flies is an idea. Superman is the execution of that idea. You know, you can draw one picture, and that is a picture of a guy flying. Great, that's copyrightable. But a man flying is not copyrightable. You know, the idea of a man who flies is not copyrightable.
If you were to copyright a paragraph of work, then there may be enough of your idea in that paragraph that someone could take that idea and write a completely different paragraph, and you would just have lost your idea. So
right, you're not going to keep your idea. The best way to lose an idea is to publish your work. Then everybody sees it.
So I should register my work before I publish it?
No.
I'm very confused.
Look, what we get into a lot here is people think that copyright registration is going to protect you from anybody using your ideas. Disavow yourself of that notion right now. That's not what it protects. If I wanted to write a novel about the American South in the Civil War, and it's a romance, and there is a riverboat gambler and a beautiful girl on a plantation and blah, 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 I can do that. But if I put in Scarlett O'Hara and, you know, Rhett Butler, the Gone with the Wind estate is going to have a problem with me. My point being that just because you have an idea doesn't mean that there aren't 300 other people that have one that is very, very similar. And registering that with the copyright office isn't really going to do you any good if you're trying to make sure that nobody else ever uses that. That will not protect you. There's such a thing as concurrent inspiration and so on and so forth. The only thing that's really going to protect you is if somebody uses that paragraph. If somebody uses that paragraph pretty much as you wrote it.
Yeah, if you finished your work and left it on the copier and someone then passes it off as their own, that's the point at which you definitely want to have had your copyright registration in order so that you can prove that that was your personal work.
I guess the heart of my question is, at what time do I register?
Well, that's really up to you. You know when I register it? When I think the likelihood of the cost of registering lots and lots of work is going to outweigh the possibility that somebody might use it without my permission. You still have rights under copyright law whether you register your copyright or not. Under the Berne Convention, your work is copyrighted the minute you create it. Registering your copyright gives you damages, statutory damages and so forth, that you don't get by law if you do not register. You get punitive damages and stuff in court if somebody violates your copyright, which you don't get if you don't register. The reason why I'm saying that if you've got important works that you want to protect in the... You're kidding, we've only got 15 minutes left? Holy crap.
That's amazing.
Yeah, boy, this went fast. I'm so sorry. But, okay, you know what my advice is? Go to the copyright office and read the information. All of the frequently asked questions there will answer every question you've got. I'm saying that $40 to protect one paragraph is overkill.
I was just using that as an example. If I produced a magazine and I stopped making the magazine, then someone starts as, oh, I'm going to reprint these. And he goes ahead and reprints them. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't do nothing against that guy since I didn't register.
That's not what I just said. You have copyright protection whether you register or not. What you don't get are statutory and punitory What you don't get are the same damages in court. That's all I'm saying. Yes, ma'am.
What is the difference between the copyright and Creative Commons?
The copyright and the what?
Creative Commons, have you seen that? It's like a copyright, but it says that...
Oh, no. You mean Creative Commons... Creative Commons is not a copyright. Creative Commons is something that Cory Doctorow and his friends made up. It's a licensing agreement. It's an open licensing agreement. It's a contract that you can sign that gives people the right to use your work. It's just a licensing agreement that anyone signed. It has absolutely nothing to do with U.S. government law. If you sit down and you sign a Creative Commons agreement, what you were saying is, anyone in the world who follows these rules has the right to do the following with my work. It doesn't give up your copyright at all unless you say it does. If you decide that your work can go into the public domain, you may do that at any time you like. But a Creative Commons license is usually an open license agreement, which anyone can do. You do not need to go and join Creative Commons. I can do it tomorrow. I can say, if you want to use this, go ahead, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't mean anything. Creative Commons license just says if people want to reprint my work for non-commercial purposes, they can do that on the web. But it doesn't have anything to do with the U.S. government or the Berne Convention or anything else.
So I understand there are actually going to be some more classes as part of the film school program in the mornings by the attorney who's the copyright specialist.
Mike Lovitz? He's my attorney.
Exactly.
I love him.
So we may want to refer some more of those copyright questions to him in
that
class.
Yeah, go to the U.S. Copyright Office. This information is all right there. It's free. It's, you know, open to the public, and, you know, read the facts.
The internet is magnificent.
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. That's entirely up to you. You can copyright collectively. For example, if I do 12 issues of a comic in a year, I can copyright the 12 issues as a batch. That's entirely up to you. If you think you need that protection, then go ahead and register. If you don't think you need that protection, don't. It's entirely up to you. I would.
I could do the novel and screenplay together as two items in a bundle.
If you want.
I would also recommend, with regards to the screenplay, WGA has a program whereby you should actually register your screenplays with them as well as with the Copyright Office.
You can read any of that.
You'll want that in the long term. Question?
Does Entertainment Strategies Group work pro bono, and do they work with animation?
We are, in fact, working with animation. We do not, as of this point, work pro bono. The services that we offer are primarily in the training area, in the consulting area, and in what we're calling signatory services, assisting production companies in getting their documents signed with the unions. There are probably going to be certain training sessions that are offered on a free basis. They've been doing some training sessions at various different law firms. I believe that at some point in the future we're going to probably be doing some in-house trainings. I don't know what the status on those is just as of yet, but if you want, you can check with me afterwards. I'll make sure that you've got our contact information. You can keep up to date on our website. If anything is offered, then it'll be up there.
Two quick things. The Graphic Artist Guild, you got any members here? Oh, that's so sad. The Graphic Artist Guild is a national union of illustrators, designers, web creators, production artists, surface designers, and other creatives who have come together to pursue common goals, yada, yada, yada. gag.org. That's so sad. Here you go. Whoa, wrong page. Sorry. See? Graphic Artist Guild, it's about 30,000 people strong. They have lobbyists, they have lawyers, they have health insurance benefits, they have all kinds of wonderful things of which you can avail yourself. I highly recommend becoming a member of the Graphic Artist Guild. Let's see, let me go through here. One of the cool things they have is they have job referrals. You can sign up for a newsletter called Jobline, and every week you get a little newsletter about jobs that may be available in your field. It's pretty handy, and I've actually, I haven't gotten any job through it, but I've gotten some friends, you know, I'm like, hey, did you hear about this? And picked up a couple of gigs out of there, so that's pretty handy. Now, they do have insurance. Their access to insurance through independent insurance agents. Now, the funny thing is that they usually get their insurance through something called USFSB, which is the United States Federation of Small Businesses. It is more expensive to join the Graphic Artists Guild than it is to join the United States Federation of Small Businesses. The Graphic Artists Guild for a professional artist, which means somebody who makes at least half their money per year. Yeah. I'm on the committee, and unfortunately, I'm not allowed to tell you what's going on in the committee. I will say that as of this time, they're not real happy, and they've put their public statement up on the website, so you can go and read that, and anything further will be announced later. The guild. The guild is $200 a year for professional artists, those who make at least half their living or more. from being an artist. They have associate memberships as well, like in student memberships. I think it goes down to $70. I can't remember off the top of my head. But you do get benefits. You just don't get to vote. You don't get to run for office. So if you need insurance, it's a good option for you. The funny thing is that the United States Federation of Small Businesses, where the Graphic Artists Guild gets a lot of its insurance, only costs $100 a year to join. And this is a pretty cool organization of which to be a member, because as a self-employed person, or if you're running your own little graphics company or whatever, you are a small business owner. And you can be a member of this organization, which has some nifty swell insurance plans. But here is some stuff I want to get to you. How many of you are looking for studio space, studio insurance, blah, 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 blah. Unfortunately, I can't get you everything. Oh, God. Art Space Clearinghouse, again, through the Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts, VLA.org, artspace.asp, supports and facilitates the development of affordable work and living space for artists. Many, many different organizations right here. I'm going to be putting this on my website. Y'all come see it. One after another, depending on where you live, New York, California, subsidized housing, subsidized studio space, yada, yada, yada. There's lots of this available. We've only got a few minutes. I'm sorry, this guy's cut me off. I'm really sorry. Quick question. Yes, ma'am.
What are your thoughts about artist representation, and is it a good thing, and how
one
would go about finding it?
Boy, that's a great question. I'm going to let him answer it.
And when you refer to representation, there's representation on so many different levels. It's always a good idea to get certainly the finest attorney that you can afford. An attorney is a very useful thing, and ultimately, if you find yourself successful, you will probably have more than one attorney.
I'm just thinking more like agents.
Agents, also. Also very good if you can get them, if you can get a good one. The great thing about agents is that, according to the Agency Act, they have to be licensed, so they do have rules and they have a limit on how much they can actually, what percentage they can take of your work. Managers, different thing. That gets into some dangerous territory, so I would definitely be very careful when engaging with a manager to make sure that they are a reputable manager, and again, have an attorney and make sure that all of your contracts with your manager and with your agent are approved by your attorney. But yeah, representation is a fantastic thing. It can, you know, open doors that you would never otherwise even know were there.
And it's going to depend entirely on what field you're in. If you're in comics, there really aren't that many agents available. But if you're doing graphic novels, there are some agents that are popping up that are handling graphic novel stuff. I just got Merrily Heifetz with Writer's House, who's Neil Gaiman's agent, and you know, 5 years ago, dang, yeah, I'm sure they wouldn't even look in our direction. But can we take another? You're just going to have to do some research. I'm not sure what you're looking for. So there are places online where you can look for artist agents and so on. And good luck, because it's yeah, crapshoot. I hate to say it.
I think we've got about 2 minutes.
We have 2 minutes.
What is your website address?
ColleenDorn.com, click on my blog. It's got a little thing that says blog. Just click on my blog. ColleenDoran.com, and then click on my blog. And I will be putting all this stuff. I'm so sorry. I can't believe this is already gone. I hope it's been of some help. Time flies. Bye.
And anybody?